This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Good Bad Billionaire from the BBC World Service.
The podcast exploring the minds, the motives and the money of some of the world's richest individuals.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, it's been quite a full-on few weeks, hasn't it? Maybe it's the weather, maybe it's the politics, but a lot of people are feeling just about ready for a holiday, which is what today's Moneybox Live podcast is all about. So what are your tips and tricks?
I generally book 5 weeks before we go. It's like the optimum time to book a holiday.
You, of course, may prefer to plan ahead for your holiday abroad and have some sunshine to look forward to. Or maybe you're someone who's optimistically staying in the UK and hoping that it's at least dry. But the weather isn't the only thing that can ruin a getaway. Holidays do go right most of the time, but not always.
A power cut overnight at Manchester Airport has caused travel disruption for thousands of passengers.
Even if you wanted to leave, you couldn't get out simply. It was just utter chaos.
Some flights to and from the Republic of Ireland are set to be disrupted today due to strike action by Aer Lingus pilots.
We had 78 cancellations yesterday to and from Gatwick on EasyJet alone.
It's been horrendous. They've not given the proper information to anybody on the board. It's been saying everything's fine.
We will get a full refund within 7 days. Take it on the chin.
Well, some people might be able to take it on the chin, but for a lot of people, it can just be really upsetting when things do go wrong. So today, Moneybox Live is wheeling our trolley of duty-free advice down the aeroplane aisle of your problems. And fastening their seatbelts next to me are today's holiday experts. I'm joined by the consumer rights champion Jane Hawkes and Sean Tipton from ABTA, which is the Association of Travel Agents and Tour Operators. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Felicity.
Thank you both for being with us. Jane, just going back to those clips we heard, when something does go wrong in your travels, what's the first thing people need to do? Because it's not always obvious if something like a power cut happens, for example.
No, you need to know your consumer rights before you travel. So you need to be well aware of those because we have learned over the past few years that there's lots of things come into the mix. We've had kind of the seven plagues of extreme weather, we've had a disruption. So any strikes, anything that comes into the mix, you need to know what you're doing and have that in your mind before you go. You need to know exactly what to ask for and what you're entitled to should a flight be cancelled. And those flight compensation rules, they remain the same following Brexit as that legislation was written into UK law.
Well, we are going to help people understand their rights in the next half an hour. And in one of those cases with Manchester Airport there, they told us they did provide food and drinks on the day. And they said it's important that passengers do keep in touch with airlines for their next steps. Sean, do we just need to accept that there will sometimes be disruption, especially if we're flying?
Unfortunately so, Felicity, particularly at busy times of year, because if you think about it, when you have many more flights operating and it's a very complicated industry, the travel industry, if one flight's affected, it can have a knock-on effect on others. So we tend to see more problems in the summer, and obviously, clearly, that's when people are desperate to get away. So yeah, problems can occur, but you're quite right what you said originally, though. Most people get away without significant problems.
Yes, and there is a break in the middle of it, so it's worth the travel. Let's hear from Gillian. She was heading home from Nice with her five-year-old daughter when they were hit by delays. It's what happened after that that really baffled her.
So we went through security as normal and expecting the flight to leave at about 10 a.m. But once we got through, everyone was just lining up. We could see the aeroplane and the time just passed. The boarding sign just kept updating, saying every 2 hours that it was going to leave 2 hours later. And without any other information from the ground crew, we just kept waiting and waiting. The only information we had from the airline was when a voucher came through at about lunchtime for something to eat. And then by the mid-afternoon, as people were starting to leave and give up on them, I ended up just booking the last two tickets on the other low-cost airline that was leaving or due to leave at about 10 p.m. because that felt like the only option out of there.
That's a long day with a five-year-old.
Yeah, indeed. But at least she coped very well because we happened to have some cartoons to keep her occupied.
You made that decision. You got home. You missed a day of school and a day of work. So not smooth sailing. What happened then?
So as soon as I got home, I'd forgotten that I'd actually got travel insurance. So in addition to contacting the original airline, I also contacted my travel insurer, who said that because I had voluntarily booked new tickets that they couldn't cover me, that it would be up to the original airline themselves. And then the original airline said that they were quite quick to respond to my email, said that they would give me a full refund for the new tickets I had to buy within 10 working days. Wanting to put it all to bed, that's what I opted for. However, it wasn't a full refund. They had deducted about £45 for some unknown reason, but called it a full refund. I accepted that, thinking, well, it'll be all done and dusted within 10 days. And then I heard nothing from them again. The 10 days passed and I tried to email the airline and to no avail. And eventually I rang a different customer service number and they just said that I had to continue waiting. They told me to try and claim it back through a dispute with my bank. But of course,
but that wouldn't work, would it? Because there hadn't been an issue with the payment or a service denied, and you're trying to get a refund on the flight that you did take.
Exactly. I did find out that the reason why they weren't giving me 100% was because they had deducted the cost of my original flights, that was the £45, from the cost of the flight that I had booked. And that doesn't make any sense to me either, because I was unable to take their flight. They in the end told me that they had not cancelled my flight. They had rescheduled it to the next day. So that was after I'd already left.
You can really hear her frustration, can't you? Jane, Gillian actually contacted the Civil Aviation Authority and says they told her she should have had a full refund with no deductions and she should also have received hundreds of pounds in compensation, which she didn't. Can you just explain what you should get for delays?
Absolutely. Well, if your flight is cancelled, then you have the legal right to a full refund or an alternate flight to your destination as soon as possible and by another carrier if necessary. That's sometimes things that people do not know, that they don't have to be on that particular airline. It's the one that will get you there the quickest. And the CAA stipulates the same day. And you may also be entitled to claim for that compensation and additional consequential expenses incurred, depending, though, on the length of the flight and the length of the delay. And that can range between £220 and £520. The airline needs to be at fault for compensation so that the refund is a standard bog standard, it's cancelled and you are entitled to that refund or a refund or a reroute.
Okay, thank you. Sean, Gillian did eventually get the money she'd been promised, if not, as I say, the compensation.
Yeah.
What should the timeline be for getting your money back if you do ask for a refund?
Well, it's going to vary. Yeah. If it's a question of the airline having cancelled your flight and you've accepted the offer of a reimbursement rather than getting another flight, then yeah, that should be done within 7 days. That's quite clear. However, if you're claiming for compensation or extra costs, etc., that's not quite so straightforward. I've looked at what the CAA have to say on that, and they're talking about it should be done within a reasonable time period. But if it's a straightforward cancellation by the airline or you took up that offer, then 7 working days, it should be no longer than that.
Thank you. That's good to know. Jane, the CAA also advised Gillian to contact Aviation ADR, which is an alternate dispute resolution service for flight complaints. Is that the right way to escalate a problem and how does it work?
It's a very good way to escalate that for a resolution. For disputes in the UK, there are two approved schemes in the aviation sector. So we've got Aviation ADR and CEDR. And you can check the CAA website to see if the airline is a member of an ADR scheme and which one it actually is. And it's for when customers have experienced issues and just have exhausted the complaints procedure. So after 8 weeks have passed. And it's also a way of resolving those disputes without having to go to court to get that money back.
Gillian definitely did sound pretty exhausted. So
yes.
good advice. Okay, well, not to add to anyone's holiday anxiety dreams, but imagine if you get to the airport, you're ready for the holiday, you've carefully booked in advance. only to be told you can't go because your passport isn't valid, even though it hasn't expired. This has been an issue for a number of travellers since Brexit, and it boils down to a change in the rules. Essentially, UK travellers used to be able to carry over up to 9 months from an old passport to a new one, but now those extra months aren't valid if you're travelling to the EU. And we don't know how many people have been affected by this, but up to 32 million had applied for passports before the rules changed. So it's potentially quite a few. Let's speak to Evan, who was one of them. Evan, thanks for joining us. Hello.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Right, it's a tale of woe, isn't it, Evan? You were booked on a ski trip to France. You got to the airport. What happened then?
So I was going to check in, and with my two buddies who had just arrived, I checked in first. They liked to push me first, and I checked in, and the check-in clerk said, sorry, but your passport's not valid. My passport is valid because I went on the website previously, the day before, and checked in, where I put in my passport number and my checked that my date was valid. But it wasn't valid because the rules have changed, and my passport was 10 years and 8 months longevity, and it had been issued exactly 10 years before, so I couldn't travel.
And this can be really hard to spot because your passport will have an expiry date in it, which is what most people would look
Correct.
At. Presumably you checked that.
I checked that, and that was not expiring until August of this year, so I had another two holidays planned on that same passport, so I was not looking at that at all. When I checked in, staff were really good. Oh, don't worry, we see quite a few of this, okay? Border control came over and he was very calm and said, yeah, don't worry, we are seeing quite a lot of this. And sure, I lost everything. So I tried insurance and they said, nope, you should have checked. So I lost my flight, obviously, hotel, ski. My ski pass was cancelled as well because I couldn't get there to cancel it.
Evan, did your friends go without you?
Yes, they're not really my friends, are they? But I look on the bright side. I could have travelled to 171 other countries in the world, just not the ones inside the European Union, because it was valid for the rest of the world.
Evan, I mean, I really feel your pain, but thank you so much for being a cautionary tale to Moneybox Live listeners. Thank you.
Advice, please. Yes, thank you.
Right, Jane, this can really catch people out, can't it? In fact, almost caught me out. I only realised my passport wasn't valid for EU travel because I was covering this story for the BBC. So let's be really clear. What are the rules?
OK, your passport needs to have been issued within the last 10 years on the day you enter the EU country. It doesn't need to extend for the duration of the stay, but the day you enter. And it needs to be valid for at least 3 months after the date that you leave the EU. In the past, British passports were valid up to and including their expiry date for travel. And now we need to focus not on the expiry date, we need to focus on the issue date. That is the important date that you need to remember when you are checking your passports. You could also check the passport requirements and validity. There's on the gov.uk website and also on the European Union's official website. So there's so many things that you can do. But goodness, what a checklist for travellers. It really sucks the joy out of going on holiday, doesn't it?
But it's worth it when it gets there. Let's keep that at
yes,
the front of our minds.
Exactly.
So anyone listening who's worried about whether they have an older passport might be caught out. They just need to go and look at the start date, not the expiry date, and check they're still within 10 years, Jane.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that is good to know. Sean, if you do what Evan and what millions of other people have done, is that just it? I mean, he lost everything. Did you just lose your holiday?
It's horrible, isn't it? I've actually seen this happen to people as well. So, yeah, it is catching people up. But unfortunately, yeah, it's your obligation as a customer to check this. Now, if you've booked a package holiday or through one of our members, we've been saying for quite some time now, make people aware of this. But obviously, not everybody does. So, yeah, unfortunately, if you are caught out like that, it's going to be 100% cancellation fee. But I think as a rule of thumb, though, people listening to this, just remember, when you renewed your passport all those years ago, did you renew it early? Because if you did, then the passport office would have added on that unused few months onto your new passport. And those are the kind of people who are being caught out. But if you waited for it to run out, then this is not going to affect you. So I think that's a very simple way of looking at it. But seriously, it's a good idea. If your passport is coming up for renewal now, have a look at it. just check this, otherwise you could end up losing a lot of money and your holiday.
And I suppose if you're someone who married in recent years and changed your name, you might well have also been caught out by this. So good to check. Right, something else we're getting emails about is travel insurance. Let me read you one from Una. She says, I booked insurance but was unable to travel on the day through illness. I've been trying unsuccessfully to recover my costs. The insurance company is ignoring me. Una, thank you so much for sending that. Jane, what do you need to show an insurer to prove if you've been too sick to travel?
Well, for any claim, you do need to put together some evidence to support your claim. So whether that be a doctor's report, whether that be any kind of medical evidence you have, then you need to have that. You can't make a claim without having evidence to support that claim in adherence to the terms and conditions of the policy you've taken out.
So even if you're ill on the day that you should be travelling, you'll need to get in touch with your GP,
yes,
get some sort of certification.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, one thing that you will need if you're travelling within the EU and a few other countries as well is a GHIC. This is a global health insurance card. It replaced the similarly snappily titled EHIC. Do people actually know what it is? Well, Moneybox producer Sarah Rogers has been to the airport pub, which overlooks Manchester Airport's runways, to find out if people have one or actually have even heard of one.
No, I don't have a clue.
Is it health?
What's a GHIC?
Yeah, we've got them all.
No.
So do you remember the European, the health cards? Did you have one of them?
Oh, the blue things.
So a GHIC is the global health insurance card, which has replaced that. So will you be applying for one now?
Well, yeah.
Because you've reminded me about it.
Oh, well, I'm glad we could be of some help.
We always like to be of some help here at Moneybox. Sean, go on then. What is a GHIC and do you need it?
It's not something that's essential, but it's very useful to have because basically, for a start, it's not a replacement for travel insurance because it has limitations, and those limitations are this. If you're travelling within the EU, it basically allows you to be treated as an EU citizen still, that they will treat you as one of their own nationals if you need to go to a public hospital. But within that, not all health services around Europe are the same as the UK. Don't get everything for free. For example, in Greece, it's always been the situation the health service is very good, but if you end up being hospitalised, it's not their job to change your sheets or to provide you with food. That's your family's job. So just something as simple as that, you could get caught out. If you are stuck for a period of time and you need, say, your husband or your wife to stay with you, it's not going to cover those extra costs. Insurance almost certainly would. And in the worst case scenario, if you had to be flown home in an air ambulance, and that's pretty horrible, but it does happen, unfortunately, it won't cover those costs. And they have risen substantially in the last few years, since the pandemic. They've almost doubled in some instances. So it's a good thing to have. But I must say, it's not a substitute for travel insurance. And and when you apply for it, it's actually very efficient. You can do it through the NHS. It comes through very quickly. I got mine within 5 days. But there are websites out there will offer to pay, for you to pay them to do this. Don't use them. It's a free service. And just Google NHS GHIC card and it's there. And it's actually also useful in other countries as well around the world. I think in Australia and New Zealand, for example. But mainly it's within the EU.
Yes. And you can see a list of where it's available if you go to gov.uk. and look up GHIC. So what about those people in the airport pub? Can they still get one before their flight, or are they just stuck now?
Well, at least, as I said, the service is very efficient. It's obviously going to be a bit slow at busier times of year, but I would say just check now, really, if you need it, because it does come through pretty quickly and it is free. And worst case scenarios, we have seen this over the years where people have ended up in a destination where they didn't have insurance, they didn't have a GHIC or an old EHIC card. You can actually get an emergency one, but that's far from ideal. Just apply in advance. And as I said, it's a very efficient service. It turns up very quickly. But also, as I said, make sure you also have travel insurance.
Yes, nobody needs a faff when they're injured
Indeed.
Or when they're ill. Jane, what if you're staycationing and travelling within the UK? Do you still need to get insurance for that?
I would take out travel insurance wherever you're going, because you could still encounter issues before you actually travel. It could mean that then you're not going to get any money back for your accommodation that you have to cancel, any transport costs that you've, any travel costs that you've factored into your trip. So always it's a belt and braces approach. Wherever you're going, whatever you're doing, take out insurance and take it out as soon as you book, because something could happen from the time you book the holiday until you actually go. It's not necessarily going to happen in the week before you go. go. So make sure you do it as soon as you book.
That's very, very good advice, isn't it? Anything can happen, and it's extra cover, really, that you're paying for. Well, I've been asking for your top tips this afternoon. We've had a message from Peter who says, check your mobile phone contract. The European regulation that bans roaming charges in 30 countries across Europe may no longer apply. It can get very expensive very fast. And Peter's tip is getting a SIM in the country where you are or an eSIM will save you money. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, we've had an email from Elliot about add-on charges. You might have heard this referred to as drip pricing. It means you see the price for something, but then extra charges get added or dripped through as you go through the checkout process. Here's what Elliot's email said.
I was stunned at having to pay for seats. Surely they're included in the flight. I can understand charging for an extra bag, albeit at an extortionate price, as somebody flying for a couple of days could make do. But charging for seats? Where else am I going to locate myself? Is standing allowed?
I think that he'd like to have a word with some of the airlines. Right, Moneybox producer Sarah Rogers is back from the pub and is here in the studio. Sarah, there has been a ban on drip pricing, hasn't there? Does that mean that this is now done with, over?
Well, most of us know how annoying it is, Fliss, to see a price for something like a flight, only to find out it's more expensive when you get to the online checkout. This practice has been banned as part of the Digital Markets Competition and Consumers Bill, and online retailers must show you the total cost for your item up front. But there is a caveat.
There's always a caveat.
So the ban only refers to what it calls unavoidable charges. So something that you can't opt out of, like a booking fee. So, sorry, Elliot, reserving a specific seat with the rest of your party and taking bags, they're seen as an optional extra because, well, you could travel light, couldn't you? And you will have a seat, but it might be next to somebody that you don't know. So I'm afraid those add-ons look like they are here to stay.
Well, I'd say thank you, Sarah, but it wasn't all good news, but thank you very much. Right, now, close to 300,000 flights will take off over the summer months. That's according to the aviation analytics firm Cirium. A lot of people do prefer to stay in the UK instead. Moneybox reporter Neil Morrow has been speaking to staycationers in a windy Llandudno.
We love coming in Llandudno because we've been coming here for 16 years.
And do you ever go abroad?
Go to Lanzarote every year, February.
Which is more expensive?
Llandudno. I've noticed such a difference in the price, as everybody knows now. The beers have gone up, you're talking, up in excess of £6 a pint now. You know, we went looking for beans on toast 2 days ago, we fancied beans on toast. £6.95.
Which is more expensive in your view?
Oh, going abroad, yeah. We've not been away since before lockdown.
Is that right?
Yeah. This is my first three or four days, yeah.
We usually holiday abroad, but we do love the UK.
I do like the UK, cool more than that. I mean, if you can't beat it, you get the weather. But in COVID, the prices went up. But when I've looked, they haven't come down again.
You could hear that lovely bracing British wind there, couldn't you? Sean, I mean, clearly a lot of people there loving where they go, where they are. But the cost of living has pushed up the prices for a lot of things, like food and drink, here in the UK and overseas as well.
Yeah, I've noticed it myself. Obviously, I go abroad a lot because of my job, and prices have gone up. Maybe not quite as much as the UK, but they have increased. But I think it's all, you know, having said that, back to my own experience, I've just come back from Greece, where you can have a very generous lunch.
You're showing off now,
Sean. Actually, under a little bit, lamb chops and chips, and it was absolutely lovely. Plus half a litre of beer, it cost €10. A few years ago, that would have been €8, but it's still very good value for money.
Thank you. Jane, in terms of how you spend, here in the UK, obviously, you'd use your bank account as normal. If you do go overseas, what's best? Is it cash or card?
Yeah, well, one thing to remember if you are paying when you're away is always paying local currency on your card, because that is the most cost-effective way for you to do so. And what you can do is you can opt for a specialist travel or debit or credit card, which gives you perhaps also free cash withdrawals, cash back, interest-free spending perhaps, so lots of perks on that. Or if you want to stick to a budget, because we are very conscious of a cost-of-living crisis, so if you want to stick to a budget, then opt for a prepaid travel card, so you can set that rate in advance and lock it in. And you do need an overspill pot for your travel
in 2024. So you need something that you can fall back on if something goes wrong, because you may have to fork out and make arrangements yourself travel-wise and recoup that from organisations, from airlines and tour operators.
But in a word, get picking up your currency at the airport as you check in. That's always going to be the most expensive.
Definitely not. Do not do that. Be prepared. It goes back to what Sean says as well. You need to be prepared before you go. You need to be prepared in a whole variety of respects for your travel.
We're making this sound more like a scout adventure than a holiday, aren't we? But whether you're staying or going, you do want the best deal, don't you? Here's a little bit more from Sarah at the airport pub.
I generally book 5 weeks before we go.
So pretty last minute?
Yeah, it's like the optimum time to book a holiday.
So how do you know that?
Just from working in the industry, and it has worked for us the last few years. We have got some good deals.
We've tried all sorts of different times, haven't we?
Yeah.
But we like going where it's a bit quieter rather than it being too heavy with your holidaymakers.
Never do dead far in advance, no. So find a good price and you book it, because if you hang about, you lose it. Because then what you do is you go back and it goes up by £200, then you book it for £200, then you look again, it's dropped again. So you just go for it when you first see it. Just don't hang about.
I'm just jealous of all these people. I'm sitting here in what is quite a cloudy Salford. Sean, do you agree with any of those tips? Is there an ultimate time to book a break? And is it 5 weeks before?
Oh, I know, I've heard these kind of things before. I mean, there's no set, and it's not science, this one, really, because we have a thing in the industry called fluid pricing. Prices go up and down very quickly in terms of demand. As a rule of thumb, though, if you're travelling at the busiest time of year, which is the summer, then you should book as early as possible, because the demand is always going to be high, so are the prices. And in the travel industry, we have our traditional sales period just after Christmas in January, and that's the best time to book. Having said that, if you want to leave it late, if you are flexible, not too fussed about where you're going, then there are always going to be some good deals, because there are some destinations which, for whatever reason, haven't sold as well. But again, definitely, if you really have to go in August in particular, book it early.
Good tip. Thank you. Jane, last summer we saw wildfires affecting some really popular tourism areas. Just this week we've had wildfires on the Greek island of Kos. With climate change, can we expect to see more of that kind of disruption?
Well, sadly so. And a whole variety of disruptions. We've seen a number of instances, different events over the last few years. I think people are just holding out for a summer where nothing actually goes wrong. And that would be really nice. But what is also really nice and really reassuring is if you're ready and prepared and you know your stuff before you go, and you've got your travel insurance and you've booked with a credit card your holiday, you've booked a package holiday if you're travelling abroad for the extra consumer protection, then you can go, I've got this, I'm going. If it goes wrong, it goes wrong and I can deal with it.
And of course, Sean, disruption of that kind is still quite rare for tourism.
It is, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, wildfires are a fact of life around the Mediterranean, have been for a number of years. We have had some pretty active ones in the last couple of years. But because of that, though, they are very well practiced at getting these fires under control very quickly. I mean, we've just seen fires in Kos, haven't we? And that took a day. Everything's back to normal now and people back in their hotels. So it is a worry, but it's just bear in mind that they are, as I said, they know what they're doing. And the firefighters around the Med do an amazing job getting these things under control quickly. And also, we will always work closely with destinations to make sure that if you're at any risk at all, that you'll be moved.
Thank you. Let's squeeze in as many final tips as we can. Jane, your biggest tip for booking a bargain?
Booking a bargain, do your research. And I'm always a little bit sceptical as well. If it looks too good to be true, then it probably is.
And where are you off to this year? You're off to Wales, I think.
I am. I'm a kind of staycationer then, really, aren't I? So no Greece for me, unfortunately.
Wales, also beautiful. Sean, in a word, any more travel planned?
I'm off to Copenhagen in a week's time, which won't be particularly cheap, but I believe it's rather beautiful. But I would say my tip would be travel in October if you're going to the Med. The weather is absolutely lovely and the crowds aren't there and it's a lot cheaper.
Well, now we've made all the parents of school-aged children scream at their radios. Thank you both very much indeed. That is all we've got time for. Thank you to everybody who's been in touch. And thank you, of course, to our travel experts. We've been hearing from Jane Hawkes and ABTA's Sean Tipton. Remember, if there is a financial issue you'd like me or the Moneybox team to take a look at, please do email us. It's moneybox@bbc.co.uk, and leave a phone number if you can. In this podcast, the producer was Sarah Rogers, the reporter Neil Morrow, the studio manager James Bradshaw. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Communicating with me, Ros Atkins. This is the podcast where I talk to some of the best communicators, like legendary magazine editor Tina Brown, the Olympic athlete and broadcaster Michael Johnson, to find out why good communication really matters and how best to do it. Have you ever walked out of a meeting and thought, why didn't I make the impact that I'd intended to? Or perhaps you put down the phone to the bank without getting the answer you wanted. We all have dozens of interactions every day, and this series will provide you with practical advice for communicating effectively during them. Communicating with Ros Atkins. Listen and subscribe on BBC Sounds.
Hi, I'm Simon Jack.
And I'm Zing Sing.
And Good Bad Billionaire is back for a new season, now from the BBC World Service.
Every episode, we pick a billionaire and we find out how they made their money.
And then we judge them. Are they good, bad, or just another billionaire?
So, who are some of the people that you'll hear about in season two?
The richest comedian ever? Jerry Seinfeld's there.
There's also my personal favourite story, the fashion designer who was once a communist mime. That's Miuccia Prada.
And the people behind some of the biggest companies on the planet. Google, TikTok, for example.
But we are kicking off with a sporting superstar, Tiger Woods.
Good Bad Billionaire from the BBC World Service. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.